Nice touch, Quillenbach, I thought. The goods had served to reinforce his story. Except again, in hindsight, I should have realized. The broker had complained that Quillenbach's experientials were bootlegged, that they were copies of originals he had handled weeks earlier. And yet Quillenbach said he had only just arrived. If I checked the manifests of Lighthuggers arriving in the last week, would I even find that a ship had come in from Grand Teton? Perhaps, or perhaps not. It depended on how fastidious Quillenbach had been in the manufacturing of his cover. I doubted that it went very deep, since he would have had only a day or two to manufacture the whole thing from scratch. All things considered, he hadn't done an entirely bad job. It was sometime afternoon, when I had finished with Dominica, that the next Houseman episode happened. I was standing with my back against the wall of Grand Central Station, idly watching a skilled puppeteer entertain a small group of children. The puppeteer worked above a miniature booth, operating a tiny model of Marco Ferris, making the delicately jointed, space-suited figurine descend a rock face formed from a heap of crumbled masonry. Ferris was supposed to be climbing into the chasm, because there was a pile of jewels at the base of the slope, guarded by a fierce nine-headed alien monster. The children clapped and screamed as the puppeteer made the monster lunge at Ferris. That was when my thoughts stalled, and the episode inserted itself, fully formed. Afterwards, when I'd had time to digest what had been revealed to me, I thought about the one that had come before it. The Houseman episodes had begun innocently enough, reiterating Skye's life according to the facts as I knew them. But they'd begun to diverge, at first in small details and then with increasing obviousness. The references to the sixth ship didn't belong in any orthodox history that I'd ever heard of, and nor did the fact that Skye had kept alive the assassin who had murdered, or been given the means to murder, his father. But those were minor aspects of the story compared with the idea that Skye had actually murdered Captain Balcazar. Balcazar was just a footnote in our history. One of Skye's predecessors, but no one had ever intimated that Skye had actually killed him. Clenching my fist, blood raining against the floor of the concourse, I began to wonder what I'd really been infected with. There wasn't anything I could do about it. He was sleeping there, not making a sound. I never suspected anything was wrong. The two medics examining Balcazar had come aboard the instant the ship was secure, after Skye had raised the alarm about the old man. Valdivia and Ringo had closed the airlock behind them, so that they had space to work. Skye watched them intently. They both looked weary and sallow, with bags under their eyes from overwork. "He didn't cry out, gasp for air, anything like that," said Ringo. "No," Skye said, "not a peep. He made a show of looking distraught, but was careful not to overdo it. After all, with Balcazar out of the way, the path to the captaincy was suddenly much clearer than it had been before. As if a complicated maze had suddenly revealed itself to have a very simple route to its heart. He knew that. They knew it too, and it would have been even more suspicious if he had not tempered his grief with the merest hint of pleasure at his considerable good fortune. "I'll bet those bastards on the Palestine poisoned him," Valdivia said. "I always was against him going over, you know." "It was certainly a stressful meeting," Skye said. "That was probably all it took," Ringo said, scratching at the raw pink skin under his eye. "There's no need to blame it on the others. He just couldn't take the stress." "There's nothing I could have done then." The other medic was examining the prosthetic web across Balcazar's chest, strapped on beneath the side-buttoned tunic, which